Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you guys once again for joining the 9-8 podcast hosted by yours truly, Kevin Thompson, founder and CEO of 9-8 Capital Group. Thank you guys for joining us. As I always say, subscribe to the channel. As I always say, go and get my book, MLB to CFP, live on Apple and Amazon. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at info@9-8capitalgroup.com. Send us your questions. Go to the website at www.9-8capitalgroup.com. Schedule an appointment. As you know, we're here to do what? Educate, empower, and engage, and also entertain. And today, we're talking about the fiduciary standard. We have a new administration. Does it truly even matter about this stuff anymore? Because they're just going to kick it to the curb. But before they kick it to the curb, let's talk about the fiduciary standard, what it is, why it is, and why it's important. And ultimately, like, why I'm against most of the things that people are coming out for the fiduciary standard. I'm going to give you my opinion, but we're bringing on a special guest, Knut Rosted of the Fiduciary Institute. We're here to debunk and kind of just debate our positions on the fiduciary standard. You don't want to miss it. Let's get it. Welcome to the 9-8 podcast, my friend. Today we have Knut Rosted on the 9-8 podcast. Thank you for joining the 9-8 podcast today, my friend.
Kevin, it is great to be here on this Thursday morning, 2 days after our national election. Great to be here.
So let's start there, right? Let's start there because you and I have been going back and forth. And again, this is not a debate. This is just an understanding because I'm not here to say anyone's wrong. You're not here to say anyone's wrong or right. We're just trying to get an understanding. So this is just a conversation. So let's talk about that, right? My opinion on this new administration is laissez-faire, deregulation, business as usual. Do you feel, and we'll just start with this first question, do you feel that the fiduciary standard and the best interest standard is basically going to be pushed on the back burner right now and the current administration is just going to ignore it for right now because we don't want to spend any money. We don't want to do any more wasteful spending on things that truly don't matter to where we're trying to go. So what say you about that?
I say it's already on the back burner, but this administration is going to push it off the stovetop entirely.
So you and I are in agreement right there, right? It's like, okay, they don't see it as important. They're going to push it off the back burner. Yeah. It's not a huge issue for them.
Yep.
Okay. Let's start where our conversation began from the fiduciary perspective, right? The concept of what a fiduciary is. Again, I like to always preface this. I am a fiduciary because I'm a CFP professional. I operate in the fee space. I also operate with an insurance license. Granted that I don't really do a lot of insurance, right? I had an insurance license. I don't do a ton of it, but when my clients need it, I like to place it, and I placed it for them on a case-by-case basis. Don't do a ton of insurance. It's not a big part of my book of business, but at the end of the day, I do place those little policies here. For the reason being is because I still get trails on old business, and I was like, well, it's either going to go to somebody. It might as well go to my business, right? So that's how I structure my business. So it's mainly fee. Yeah. We do hourly. We do AUM. We do flat fee planning. We do all that kind of stuff. We have a bunch of different revenue models. So your main contention is that from a fiduciary perspective, it's disclosure. Is that correct?
Disclosure from a fiduciary point of view is part of it.
Okay.
But no, it is not all of it. And there's lots of commentary that says is, as long as you disclose it, you're fine. And for a fiduciary, that is not fine enough. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that in addition to a disclosure, or some would call a casual disclosure, mm-hmm. There's an obligation that your clients that you're working with understand the nature and the consequences of the conflict of interest.
Yeah.
So it goes beyond just a simple disclosure.
Okay. So, help me understand how a disclosure of compensation is going to help mitigate a it's going to solve the best interest. It's going to solve someone working in someone's best interest.
Well, first of all, as I said, it goes part of the way to get to the best interest. At its most fundamental level, Kevin, it's no more different if you are dealing with somebody who is doing your taxes as an accountant, or you're dealing with an attorney on a family matter. It would be extraordinarily odd for any of us to go ahead and agreeing to the engagement, the services, without knowing what the fee is. Now, I'm going to use an example that you know that many people use when they question the position of a fee-only advisor.
Perfect.
Dealing with conflicts. Mm-hmm. And they say, what do you do when Mr. and Mrs. Smith say, we want to pay off the mortgage. We want to go into these accounts that you are managing at an AUM. We want to pay off the mortgage. Now, in some ways, that's a good example to make the case of the obligation for explaining it such that the investor understands it. Mm-hmm. And this is easy. If the investor comes to you and says, we want to pay off our mortgage. We want to take $300,000 out of this account to pay off our mortgage. What do you think, Mr. or Mrs. Advisor? Well, to me, the good advisors don't have a set answer. The good advisors are looking at the macro level and then looking at what is going to make Mr. and Mrs. Smith sleep better at night, you know, and that's all over the park, right? I mean, so the good advisor will say, you know, either, well, I think it's a good idea for you to pay off your mortgage or not. Mm-hmm. Now, if he or she says it's not a good idea, then she has the obligation to say, and with them sitting, you know, preferably sitting in front of you so you can see the heads go up and down, you know, I have a conflict of interest in having you not pay off the mortgage, because that $300,000 is going to come out of my account that you're paying X basis points on. Then they can look at themselves and say, well, okay, he says we should not pay off the mortgage because A, B, and C. He also says he has a conflict of interest that he has a financial benefit by us not paying off the mortgage. So what do we do? I mean, so, you know, but so that to me is the classic, yet oversimplified, because we both know there are not very many. There those instances where it's so, I think that's pretty straightforward. But anyway.
But what I run into is this. So, for example, a client has $300,000 of a portfolio with me, right?
Yeah.
And I'm making X basis points on it. Yeah. And they want to put money in towards a Roth account, but they can't because they make too much money. So I want to do a backdoor Roth. But I got an IRA sitting here. So I've done this in the past. I've actually said, okay, we're going to move that to your 401k so we can start implementing a backdoor Roth. That just cost me X basis points just to start a measly $6,000 or $7,000 Roth, because I know it's better for them to do it this way.
Right.
You know what I mean? And those are the types of things that I argue against, because I always say this, and I know you see it on the thread. I said, how many of you are willing to give away $500,000 of a portfolio just to put X amount of dollars into a Roth account? Very few people would say they would, unless you're, again, we get paid multiple ways. We get flat fees. We can do it all these different ways. Right. So it's not really a concern of mine, hourly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. My main concern, and this is where I want to go with this.
Yeah.
I think we're creating factions, just like our political environment. Our environment right now is so cutthroat, where it's either fee only or you're wrong. I know you see it on LinkedIn, either fee only or you're wrong. Help me understand we've gotten here.
Well, and I think I started to go into this on LinkedIn to say that it was only as recently as 15 years ago that we had a situation where in the minds of advisors, insurance agent, brokers, there was a clear line between that business, those businesses that were based on selling product, as opposed to those businesses that were based on selling advice. Now, this is where I know that some people will begin to get antsy because they they don't agree with the premise because they'll say, well, don't tell me you're not selling something because you're selling your, and yes, that's true. But then let's go the next step.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you've got to sell Mr. and Mrs. Smith that for, let's say it's a flat fee of X thousand dollars per year, or it's an AUM, you know, fee
100%.
That, you know, that they need to buy your services.
100%.
Yes, absolutely right. But here is where the world has changed so much in just 15 years, because number one, that clear line between distribution and sales as opposed to advice has really almost evaporated in the minds of many regulators and in the minds of the broker-dealer industry at large and in the minds of brokers, I think, and insurance agents generally. And we see this today in terms of how they talk about whether it's Reg BI or whether it's the DOL rule, in terms of what their role is in that.
Okay.
And so that line has disappeared. Now, that to me is the basis for the environment that you begin to describe, where it's become like our political environment. And so to me, the starting point is, you know, it was only 15 years ago, or some would say 20 or 25 years ago, that the premise, the underlying premise was very different. There's a line between sales and distribution and a line between advice. And that was an important line. Now, what I just barely mentioned on LinkedIn was to say, and, you know, that line is not created out of some special interest talking points to say, let's figure out a way to sort of sell what we want to sell. No. And this is the point. This is part that gets me a little frustrated, in that the entire history about where fiduciary comes from and why it matters, in a sense, has been evaporated from our, excuse me, eliminated from our memory. Because, and it's not, and the point is not that everything in history is good. The point is that there are a lot of things that have a history to them, that to understand what that history is important to understanding why we are today. So I use the case in the Investment Advisors Act in 1940. You know, it was created because of what? Because of the perception. And if you want to, you know, just so you know, I seek out individuals to say, you know, Knut, this is where I think you have it wrong.
Okay.
And, you know, so it's not a matter of saying, you know, it's not a matter of trying to convince per se, but it's understanding where I am coming from and where others who disagree with me come from. So what I say is, you go back to the 1940 Act, and there you find out that the reason the Act existed, the reason it was created, was to separate the sales abuses that were reported, you know, that leading up to the stock market crash, you know, literally. And so that's what they were going against. And you could say, well, they were wrong about that. Well, okay, but then let's have the conversation why they were wrong. Because what I think they were right about was that a conflict of interest is a huge detriment to the type of advice that you want to give and that we want everybody else to give, in terms of being, and I boil it down to two things: being independent and being competent. You know, I think, you know, when you think about what the CFP standard means, I think that's what it comes down to, broadly speaking.
Yeah.
So that's where it starts from in 1940. And then the Supreme Court weighs in 1963 and says, you know, yes, you know, it in an issue on what the meaning of the Advisors Act was, yes, yeah, you know, there was the intent to set apart this thing called fiduciary advice, and that's the first time they use the word fiduciary in modern, and make it different from sales. So that's the background that I think is forgotten entirely on this, and that explains, because the only reason I mentioned, because it comes to your point. Why are we here where we're here? So fast forward to 15 years ago and fast forward today, that line has been eliminated. And so you have virtually all brokers, agents, advisors standing up and saying, I'm a fiduciary. Now this is where we sort of, I think we sort of pause, but where I think to continue, and, you know, and you ask why, you know, why can't I say that I'm a fiduciary? I mean, well, no, excuse me. You haven't said it, go put it
Not
like
me,
that.
no, I'm yeah.
No, but you have made the point that you are a fiduciary, and then you
Well,
have criticized those that try to make it and as sort of a high class sort of thing.
exactly. I think it's, they've done a very great marketing job on getting that out there. It's like you see it on commercials right now. Are you a fiduciary planner? Yes, I am a fiduciary. It was like, first of all, I didn't even know what a fiduciary was 10 years ago. I didn't even know, nor did I care, right? But at the end of the day, now they've done a great job marketing it, and I applaud them. Congratulations. It worked.
So then I go, I think, to a next step to our conversation back and forth, and in responding to your question or your, well, I think it's fair to say that you're critical of those that those individuals that suggests that fiduciary is only for some people, or well, but
No, I, well, no,
say
well,
yourself.
Knut, what I'm critical of is people using it as I'm better than you when that's not the case. It should not. It's never about them being better than someone else. I grow very frustrated and tired. People selling themselves as a superior planner because they have either a designation, which again I have most of them, and also for their ability to call themselves a fee-only fiduciary. It irritates me. That's just me.
Well, that makes me more even appreciate more you inviting me on. So here we are. But no, well, and this is where maybe this is the core of our different perspectives because, again, this is not something that was invented by some clever lobbyist 10 years ago, Kevin. But it's based, going back in the law, there was always a underlying said or unsaid presumption that the best or better advisor would be one who is works as a fiduciary and or works based on the principles there. So and maybe that's the crux of our disagreement. And so that part mystifies me a little bit because it sort of negates the entire background of the legal, and then looking at the legal differences between sales and advice.
It's not okay. So granted, there are some great advisors or great planners out there or consultants, and that again, I think we need to clean that up, right? There's too many names that people go by. I agree with that. It needs to be cleaned up. You need to know who you're working with, what's an advisor, what's a consultant, what's a planner, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I 100% agree on that. But what I will not agree on is because, hey, I can give you a list of 100 people that were fiduciaries. And I know you said you can't legislate people doing wrong. I get that. But they're just as fallible as anyone else selling an IUL or VUL or whatever UL out there. We can't negate that fact, right?
Well, here is maybe a another place where we view it differently, and that to me is the difference between someone who I consider to be a fervent fiduciary, and so in that I'm acknowledging that it's not black and white, but there are different different forms of fiduciary, but I still think there. But that being said, there is still a line, in my view, between fiduciary and non-fiduciary. So those who are most fervent fiduciaries, I think that no, I think they do operate their practices. They do render advice differently from those who are more flexible about what fiduciary means. So so anyway, I think that is part of the picture. But to get to your point of, I guess the key point of it's not right, it's not fair to say that fiduciaries are better than non-fiduciaries. That's how I'm thinking about what you're saying, if that's accurate. And better is a very general word, and so it can be misconstrued. So I would say that fiduciaries, as opposed to non-fiduciary, are if they are if if they are following fiduciary principles and practices, they are operating at a higher standard. They are operating.
I'll give you that. They're operating at a higher standard. So here's another question. So from a disclosure perspective,
Yeah.
in either a fiduciary suitability context, let's just say we have we're doing an income plan, right? And we're placing a product into the plan. Like I can do it from a fiduciary capacity on the AUM side, or I can do it again. I'm not with a broker, so I don't know how that works anymore. I'm out of that space. But then there's other guys who I know who are on the broker side who can place that exact same product but get a 6% commit sales commission. But it does the same thing on either side of the fence.
Yeah.
So what say you about, because this is disclosure, whether they disclose it or not, the plan remains the same.
Yep.
So like,
Yeah,
why
okay,
is disclosure important in
Well,
that regard?
here's, I mean, that this example in a sense is a much better example because I think it cuts to the issue that those in 1940 grappled with in coming up with the Investment Advisors Act, and
Okay.
that is, how do you deal with all the salespeople out there holding themselves? I mean, a lot of the language is the same, literally 80 years, 85 years later, it's the same language. How do you deal with that? And what it means to me, here is where disclosure does mean, I should say, disclosure by itself does mean or could mean a whole lot. I am all for more disclosure. One of the re you know, as a sidebar, one of the reasons why I think that this little movement on the side that goes under the name of fixed fees, flat fees, advice only, I think one reason why they seem to have a little bit of a boomlet, and I don't know how big it is, but I know that they've got loud voices out there, and you've seen it on LinkedIn, is because guess what? A client can go to their website, and a client can go to their website and many times see their different levels of
Tears.
services, and guess what? See a price tag associated with it. And I'm thinking, oh my God, it all of a sudden, it demystifies this whole issue of compensation versus services. Now, this gets back to your point and gets back to an associate point that I make is you may be seeing when we get to the point, if we get to the point, I think it's a when, but at that point, the world's going to be so different where all brokers can be as completely transparent with their fees and the revenues that go into their firms as an independent RIA can be. I'll be the first to say, Kevin, I will look at it very differently.
Okay.
And what I mean by that, because right now brokers can't do that. And I think the poster child for that is Ameriprise.
Don't get me started with that. I'm
Okay.
right there
Well,
with you.
but I mean, I get 16 pages on their ADV to say how we get compensated. 16 effing pages.
Well,
Okay.
but that's, I mean, that's if that's what they want, that's what they're going to give you, because now you have, well, we get this because we have a relationship with these people. They got relationships with all these different ETF companies, and it's going to get, nobody's going to read it. And I'm just
No,
saying, like,
well,
what are we
of
doing?
course, but see that is the poster child of an example where just the disclosure by itself doesn't do a whole lot. Now, but you know what they also do, and I looked at this 2 or 3 years ago. I don't know whether they've changed it out because somebody I think made a big mistake. They also put on their ADV that we don't share with our reps all our different revenue sources. So,
Exactly.
well,
Exactly. So
so.
now the rep is kind of tied to only knowing what they know, and
Bingo.
then
Now, and so I say, and this, I'm not assuming that all RIAs are angels. Far from it. But what I'm saying is that if an independent RIA wants to, he can tell Mr. and Mrs. Smith every quarter, these were your
Yeah,
total
100%.
fees, these were total expenses, and that's the deal. And they
Yeah.
can do that where I don't think the broker dealer can.
Yeah, you're right. I'll give you that for sure. That you're right. You're right. You're absolutely right on that. So I'm gonna agree. So we've reached some agreement there, right? So that's good. We've reached some agreement there. Now, a couple other things real quick. You mentioned before how the broker dealers operate in the fiduciary and the suitability space. Do you feel that's a competitive advantage for them?
Well, here's a competitive advantage, and going back, and I and I focus on Reg BI
Yeah.
because it is the poster child there. What, you know, Reg BI started 15 years ago when the chairman of the SEC ran up to New York and said how wonderful fiduciary is. This is after the Obama administration started their white paper. Further down in her speech, she said, oh, by the way, there's not a big difference between broker dealers and investment advisors.
Gotcha.
So fast forward that, and here we have Reg BI, and if you know, and Reg BI basically said it does the final step of removing the line between broker dealers and investment advisors, and so here we have it that and as we see on the required language to inform CRS, what do? They use the exact same language to describe the standard. So here we are. So you know what I think that's unfair is. It is, you know, and it is basically intended to be misleading, in my view. And I, you know, I will, I've
But
said
isn't
that.
all legalese? Isn't that all legalese at this point? Is
Well,
this me?
no, but no, but you know, I mean, I, you know, I tell you, this didn't happen overnight, and there was a lot of brain power between the offices of Merrill Lynch and the offices of the SEC to go into, you know, this is our solution. This is our solution. We will just proclaim that broker dealers meet a best interest standard, and then we'll say that investment advisors need to call their standard best interest. And this was 2 years ago, and 2 years ago, the SEC staff comes out and says, and warns RIAs from using the word fiduciary in their form CRS. They
Yeah,
say,
I
they
got you.
warn them against doing that. I say, okay. I rest my case, Your Honor. You know, that's it right there. I was just going to add, and this is a little bit to another point I made, is that so we've come to a point where I think most broker dealers view themselves internally as fiduciaries. And you know, even though most of them can't put it on paper in front of a client,
They
they're
don't want
not
the
allowed to.
oversight. They don't want the oversight. They don't want the legal headache. I
Well,
mean,
no,
it's
but I
just.
mean, the broker dealer won't let them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what. So when I was with my broker dealer, they said, "No, you're not a fiduciary." I'm like, "What? I'm a CFP. What do you mean?" Like 2 or 3 years ago, and me, I operated on. I wore two hats, right? I was an investment advisor, and then I was an RR. So as an RR, I'm not a fiduciary, but as an IA, I'm a fiduciary. It's bull. It's bull s. And you and I both know that it's bull s. But again. It's not a competitive advantage because if it was, we would all be running towards it versus running away from it because we know how terrible the business is, in my humble opinion. I think the broker-dealer space is just, it needs a lot of work, in my opinion. But it's necessary because, and this is what I'm going to say, it's necessary because it gives people the ability to have access to products and services that they could may not be able to get at an RIA because of pricing. That's just my opinion.
And I, you know, and I don't disagree with that. You know, my point of disagreement with is if you're going to be a salesperson and a distributor for whatever firms, just tell people that's what you are.
I
And that's
agree.
what they won't do. That's what they won't do.
The last thing here we're talking about for me, I don't think we need more oversight. I just think we need more professional integrity and again, piling on more regulations. I don't think it will inherently improve anything, but I think enforcing rigid standards across the industry, focusing on like training and professional development. I know we talk about that all ad nauseum, but I think that will help ensure that we uphold the client's best interest versus having it forced down our throats versus a regulatory body. That's just my stance. I think that they need to have an overhaul on A, the insurance and investment advisor space, the way they people come into the industry. I think that needs to be kind of overhauled because the old way of doing it is just it just you leave a lot of people. They'll work with you 1, 2, or 3 years and they're gone, right? The high turnover and the sales practices, it's gonna do one thing to a person that comes in. They're either gonna fall in line and drink the Kool-Aid or run away from it as fast as possible. That's what you're gonna be left with. And many of us like to run away as fast as possible and open up our own shops. But again, that's just my stance. What would you like to leave the people with today? Because again, my point is I just don't think we need further regulation because again, I don't want to see any more paperwork. Like I told Mr. Fala on the last one, I said, man, I feel like I'm missing something every time I'm sending someone through the process, whether it be a brokerage firm or whatever. Go ahead.
Well, I think what you are saying leads into what I have already been saying in terms of the answer. The way to improve things going forward is not more regulation from from the federal, except for, and this is maybe this is a separate discussion. I am supportive of what the Department of Labor is trying to do, and they're probably going to that's probably going to be scuttled now with with the election. But what is needed is groups like the CFP board to be to better be in a position to enforce what a fiduciary means. Now,
And they
so
are because of the standard itself does, right? So
yeah,
they're doing a good job.
but here's where again we may differ. And I know, I mean, the CFP board doesn't like me saying this.
Uh-oh. We'll keep it quiet.
Oh, that's right. Let's not tell anyone. No. A year ago, Dan Moisen, who was then the chair of the CFP board, did a very lengthy and very well-written column for Kitsis on the CFP standards. And one of his points at the end was to make the point that the private group, by definition, does not have the same capabilities as a government agency to enforce their standard. Now, and that I think is a significant point, and I have given CFP board credit for making that acknowledgement because, it doesn't have to be financial regulation, but we know as a general proposition, if a rule is not enforced, it might as well not be there in most cases. I mean, you can look at our stop signs on our streets. I mean, if people didn't stop at stop signs, that would be a problem. But that's self-enforced. But the larger point is the progress going forward is going to come from groups whose members demand that they hold and maintain a higher standard than what the government, because you stand back and you don't have to be an academic or an expert on regulation to know that the government regulation usually sets the bottom. Underneath this, you can't go below. Otherwise, we're gonna get you. In but while standards set by professions, if you want to look at accounting and look at law, they are in the business of raising the standard to what they believe is sufficient or required, or that the best practitioners should uphold. So it's two different standards, and going forward, it's going to be the private groups and not the re government regulators, as a general rule, to make a difference.
I think that's the way it should be because that's what you see with the current administration, right? They want everything to go back to the states. They want the government out of all the hands. Let the states handle certain things, and the states are going to be the quote unquote those groups. The CFP group is quote unquote the state, and they should be able to to police their individuals within their groups. So I agree with that.
Well,
Absolutely.
and interestingly enough, and I don't know, the state regulators as a rule, as a generalization, I should say, they are much more focused on this thing called fiduciary, and they are much more knowledgeable about it. And so, there's hope there from the state regulators to move this thing forward as well.
Well, Knut, I thank you for this. I know you and I have been going back and forth. And again, never an argument, just a conversation because.
No, I well listen, I agree with I think the spirit of what you're saying, but I think a civil constructive argument, maybe it's the word argument that is becomes controversial, is actually quite constructive. I have a better understanding of where you are coming from, and I think you may have a better understanding of where I am, and that was because we exchanged
Dialogue.
ideas, dialogue.
Yeah,
Exactly.
and again, like my main concern is like I just feel that we have to kind of remove this tribalist culture that we're trying to that's being as a consequence of what we're talking about because I get so frustrated when you see people that are throwing people under the bus. You're like, man, stop, you know? And then I also get upset of people claiming holier than thou saying, well, this is the way I do it, and this is the way everybody should do it. You're like, man, I don't care how you do it, because bottom line is, this is the American capitalist society. You want to have income streams, and however you have as many, if you want one income stream or 35,000 income streams, and your business is flourishing, that's the way to do it, because you want to offset your expenses, and that's how you run a business. So I don't care if you want a fee only, and that's the only way you get paid. If you want AUM or all the other stuff, run your business, my friend. Just stay out of everybody else's. That's all I'm saying.
All right. All
All right,
right.
my friend. Hey, Knute, thank you so much for joining us. Any last words you have for the panel?
Well, let's go back to where we started. For my friends and colleagues who are very upset about what happened 2 days ago, I assure you it's not going to be as bad as you fear it is. I mean,
Hey, I don't have any comment on that. I tell people all the time. I'm like, well, win or lose, is, I mean, like the result. I was like, well, it's gonna be good for my business. I mean, it's always good for business. Small business owners like myself, we get revenue, and Trump administration loves people like us. So,
There you
and I,
go.
and that, that and that and that's no indication of how I voted, by the way. Just what I
No,
have to say.
right. We could keep that out of there. But so anyway, so I'll expect us to bump into you in the halls of Congress now under this
Absolutely, absolutely,
on
my
the
friend.
White House
Knute,
there.
thank you for joining
Okay.
us, man.
Thank you.
Thank you so
Thank you,
much. I
man.
appreciate you. We had Knute Rostead on the call today talking about the fiduciary standard. Bottom line is, with the new administration, hey, this may be a moot point, but the new administration is going to basically poo-poo all this stuff and keep it going in the right direction. So, hey, again, I'm not against the fiduciary standard. I'm against people who use it as a ploy to say that they're better than others and you're not. Thank you guys for joining the 90s podcast. Subscribe to the channel. Go and get my book, MLB the CFP, live on Apple and Amazon. You have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at info@99capitalgroup.com. Send us your questions. Go to the website at www.99capitalgroup.com. Schedule an appointment. As you know, we're here to do what? Educate, empower, and engage, and also entertain. And today we talked about the fiduciary standard, what it is, why it is, and why it doesn't really matter anymore. Stay humble, stay safe, my friends. I'll see you again soon.